listeners, and welcome back to Flight Through Entirety, the only Doctor Who podcast who knows the secret of the old times. So it's salt, pepper, paprika, tarragon. Oh, wait, I'm reading the wrong thing. I'm Brendan.
I'm Nathan.
And I'm Frankie Howard for this one, because if you say it in his voice, it's no misses.
We've finally reached the 25th anniversary, despite almost being cancelled twice. It's Silver Nemesis!
Hurrah! What's this about?
Good question. It's about yomping through the countryside, some Nazis.
It's Five Go Mad in Windsor, isn't it?
So, right.
25 Go Mad in Windsor.
So, yeah, 25th anniversary special. As we discussed last week, this was meant to go out last, but was moved third because of scheduling issues, which does lead to hilarious continuity errors, which I didn't bloody notice until the discontinuity guy came out.
No.
But we'll discuss those more next week.
Should have been Cliff Richard. Anton Differing was so overcast in this one.
Well, you know who was the first choice?
Charles Grey. Betty to his mates.
Who kind of said, oh, you know, can it be a bit of a bigger part? But it turned out, I believe, he just wasn't available. But also,
no, he actually had a job because, you know, he was a working actor, yeah.
But they also assured him he would not have to speak with a German accent.
Yeah, he wouldn't
have
to do the accent. Because, you know, they're not actually meant to be Nazis. Because RTL had bought the series from the crunch of RTL was actually Luxembourgian. Mm-hmm. You know what those Borgias got up to. But they broadcast directly into Germany and the Prussian regions. And so, of course, you know, we didn't mention the
no.
war. No.
Which is
not
why.
Even, no, we just didn't. It wasn't something done. Mm. But then, of course, our lovely director, Chris Clough, thought, well, it's no swastikas. Come on, where's your banners? It's not, make it look lively. Come on, your home's not a home without them. So then he went a bit Mrs. Smith everywhere, didn't he? Went a bit Mrs. Bidmead and stuff. No, coloureds up all over the walls. Actually, they're not meant to be. The script is really careful to just make them fascists.
Yeah, well, that's...
And they cast Anton Differing with that accent.
Well,
he was so damn sick. This is the last thing he ever did, all his whole career, being an anti-Nazi and getting out, because he was queer, of course, so he had to get out of the Germany and, you know, 33, 34, I think he got out and played Nazis the whole rest of it. He said, I don't understand and it's terrible. I'm only here for the tennis.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he didn't understand the script. He was just there for Wimbledon. He hated playing another Nazi.
Yes.
Because
he whinged and moaned the whole time on set.
Yeah. So Kevin Clark and Andrew Cartmell had worked very hard on the script. Kevin Clark had seen two episodes of Doctor Who before this and wasn't terribly impressed by either of them. I don't know what they were.
No, they were The Underwater Menace Part 5, now sadly lost.
And Joe Wharton's Diaries, yes.
And the
I
Space
think it really
Pirate.
Helps. Yeah, I think it really helps that he hadn't seen them. This is as far away from the Pip and Jane universe as it's possible to be, isn't it?
But that's
and still be Pip and Janey. Mm.
It is still a bit Pip and Jane.
Very
it is
Pip and Jane.
A kids show.
Yeah.
They're the ones who came up with, hey, let's have Nazis in it. And it was sort of at the fifth stage of draft that John said, you do realise we're screening in Germany now, Andrew. Maybe let's take them out. So every reference in the script was changed to paramilitaries.
You know they're carrying Uzis, don't you? Which are Israeli military handguns and rifles. Yeah, I think they're very generous on what they declare to be okay now, these neo-cough-cough-fascists.
Look, I'm going to...
How beautiful did this look? We turned this on at the time. My goodness, Doctor Who looks as good as everything else on TV.
It's inexplicable, I think, that it took them so long to get out of the studio. And part of the problem with the Colin Baker era is it's so studio-bound and so many space corridors. And here we're actually in Windsor. We're inside buildings, which has almost never happened.
We're outside.
On location.
We had nice houses in sunshine. Yeah. I believed it was South America.
Yeah, well, yeah, we're inside that building, which has been dressed up. You're inside the, you know, the cafe in Windsor. It looks just terrific. Mm. I really like it. There's something really fresh and light about it. It is actually a bit of a mess. You know, it doesn't really work.
Yeah.
There's a lot of running around.
Yeah. For me, the big problem is actually the Nazi / paramilitaries. you can take them out and it really doesn't affect the story that much. And
Don't lose the skinheads, though.
Oh, no. God, no. 2 weeks ago, when we were talking about Remembrance of the Daleks, Ben Aronovich had been trying to get into TV writing for 5 years, and he was desperate to impress on Doctor Who. As you alluded, Richard, he did pitch the story which eventually became Battlefield.
It's called Nightfall or something originally?
Nightfall was Night his Charm. First pitch, then Storm over Avalon.
Yes. That three times and it'll be a big finish.
The reason they asked him to write Remembrance of the Daleks is they were really impressed with his grasp of action sequences. And so they said, hey, we want to do a Dalek story. Why don't you do it? Now, the thing is, when he was writing it, you know, he took home Dalek tapes and he researched the Daleks because he's like, I want this to be proper. So he thought of including Thals and he thought of including Ogrons, but he decided, no, I'm going to keep it simple.
Because
this is my first one.
I'm not
going
to bore the tits off everyone.
I wish someone had suggested this to Kevin Clark. I wish someone at some point had said, Kevin, what are the Nazis actually doing? Because really, their purpose just exists to get the bow into the story. And even then, the Doctor goes to Windsor Castle to get the bow. He could pick up the bow there. They threaten Ace in episode one, but the Cybermen show up. And this is another example of slightly poor communication on this story. Kevin Clark's script says that the Cybermen appear and distract the paramilitaries. Chris Clough got that and went, oh, they appear. They must appear in a spaceship. But what Kevin Clark actually meant was, no, they appear out of a portal, making them mythic.
They appear out of Peter Miles. That's the great sadness of this, that there is no Nida in this story.
Thank you. That's what I wanted to know.
Yes. But can you imagine if, as a 25th anniversary, they'd brought back Katie as Lady Peter Miles? Who else would you have liked? Pat Troughton just as the screaming rock.
Philip Maddock in fishnets.
Again.
The thing is, Pat Troughton would have loved that because he constantly wanted to come back under a monster mask so nobody
in
knew who he was.
Tom. In fact, Tom as the screamer, really. We should probably name check just a correction. Ruth Maddock was never Philip Maddock's daughter, although she was the same age as his daughter at a previous marriage. She was his wife all the time.
I put that in the show notes.
Did you? Yeah. I just want to throw that in because it's saucy.
There should be laws against that kind of age
against
gap
Welsh
nonsense.
People,
yes. Says the Jones.
So who else would we cast if we had a mythic go at being Cartmel for this or J&T for this, considering it's a 25th anniversary? I mean, we've already nominated Brian Blessed as Lady Painforth.
Yes, that's right.
I like Katie as Lady
Painforth.
Katie
as Lady Painforth, yeah, that works for me too. Yeah.
Carol Ann Ford as Richard.
I thought you were going to say as the police car with the siren. That
my ankle, my ankle, my ankle.
Carol Ann Ford Anglia, yes.
So it's
going to be dad jokes. It's the 25th anniversary. Come on, dad jokes and cherries.
So yeah,
I love this show. Can we just say how much I love this story? Okay. Fiona Walker. There's a reason that Nathan is sitting here with crossed legs because he can't contain himself because it's got Fiona Walker.
She's wonderful, isn't she? And she's in Keys of Mariners.
She actually, yes. Well, really, in fact, they should have just used the entire cast of the Keys of Mariners.
Yeah, Altos.
And Reprint.
Sabitha.
the young blokes.
A lot of white people on Mariners, aren't there?
There are a bit. George Koulouris, sadly, no longer with us.
The resurrected skull of George Koulouris in one of the Morphetan brain jars.
Yes.
See, that works.
She's so good. Why are people maligning this as being stupid and naff? Because it is. But, I mean, you know, there are so many illusions. Winter's Tale.
Yes. Such things, pursued by a bear.
Such things only happen in the theatre.
I think the problem is that the conception of the story is you have three groups of villains racing each other to get hold of the nemesis.
It's the wacky races.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's light, that's fun, that kind of works. But as you point out, Brendan, one of those groups of people is actually surplus to requirements.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Nazis.
And, you know, also...
And Nazis should not be funny unless they're played, as in the first season of 1970s Wonder Woman, by Jewish members of Mel Brooks's own cast.
That's right. I'm going to recommend to the listeners, go out and see Mel Brooks and Anne Bancroft in To Be or Not to Be.
Oh, that's my pick of the week. Because it has nothing to do with this show at all. Yes. It's so good.
It's incredibly funny and incredibly tragic and incredibly moving and all these amazing things. And, you know, even though it is a Mel Brooks, it's not your Spaceballs, Dracula Den Loving It, Men in Tights kind of humour. It is based on an earlier film, of course, but that's all I'll say about it. You know, how do the Nazis find out about the bloody nemesis, for God's sake? Painfort knows about it because it's hers, in a way.
Because we haven't mentioned them because they're the silver reflective mirrors from the last story in the room. But how do the cyber folk know about it? Well, this must be the Lady Painfort.
They were in space. They're space people. Space people can find things out.
Well, they're kind of jazz. Terrible, aren't they? Is they this are. Their worst oh, God. Story?
No, they're
in the best. Series?
They're pretty. They're shiny and pretty, and they put their hands on their hips.
I mean, what the hell?
You're doing Shirley Bassey again.
No, it's David Banks. He always has an incredibly posh sidekick who says things like, promises to aliens have no validity. You know, like,
I must protest, leader.
That's so bad.
Oh, my God. The gold thing. Okay. In Revenge of the Cybermen and in Earthshock, you have to get right up next to the Cybermen and sort of shove it down their gob. Here, literally, when a Cyberman is 5 feet away from gold, he wets his pants.
Well, I actually think it's really hilarious that...
they're a bit camp in this and all, aren't they?
Terrible. And
it is carry-on cyber league.
Yeah, they can't approach that tomb thing while Lady Painfort's firing gold arrows out there. And so the Nazis say, well, we don't have that weakness. Yeah,
we are immune to these things. Unless they hit us in the face. Not the face! Not the face!
They're poison-tipped arrows. Like, why are the Nazis immune to that? And like, I think that they really missed a trick by not having the arrows dipped in nail polish remover and taking out the Cybermen that way. Because we all know that works.
A ponytail.
After Leslie French makes a time calculation, taking into account the change in calendar 200 years after his own time.
The 1753 Gregorian calendar.
Yeah. Oh, well.
And also he predicts Newton and, you know, the planetal shift. Yeah. No. It's very good. Well, this is why he should have been the first Doctor. And we all know he's in this because he was the first casting choice and he wasn't available. Where he said, no, naff off, I've got a career. And they said, Billy's sitting around doing nothing but moaning. So they put Billy Hartnell in.
Yeah.
And I'm very glad they did too.
But, you know, he could have whipped up some nail polish remover easily.
It's Leslie French, I'd say.
Richard, you were saying, why is this considered a bad story? Now, recently on Facebook, there was a meme going around to give your favourite and least favourite story per Doctor.
Yes.
It was really fun, that.
Yeah.
Yeah, very nice.
And, you know, me having to spend 20 Facebook posts explaining to people why Black Orchid is horrible. Even my own sister betrayed me. Anyway, moving on.
She's not with us anymore.
I list this story
She's in a fiberglass rock in orbit, right?
Covered in front axial projections.
And cobwebs. How the hell did it get cobwebs up there?
Space spiders.
It's very Space 1999, wasn't
it? The spiders
it?
Of Rassilon. But I list this story as my least favourite.
Am I not beautiful?
Oh, you know you are, darling. But I still give this 6 out of 10.
Yeah. I think that's a bit harsh. Well, I love this show.
I think it is telling that...
What dollies of it, Tony Bird?
I think this is the worst Sylvester McCoy story, but that doesn't mean that it's bad. You know, like, I would...
No, I think you can look at season 24 and find an example there.
Yeah, maybe Dragonfire, actually.
Although, actually, it's my favourite of season 24.
Yeah, well, see, they're all good. I think they are all good. And so, you know, Silver Nemesis
After
is
Delta.
A giant mess. Mm.
But the thing is, even the bits of Silver Nemesis which are a giant mess are somehow satisfying. So, you know, episode 2 and half of episode 3, the Doctor and Ace just spend it wandering around the countryside, but they spend it wandering around the countryside defeating the Cybermen with jazz. Which is sort of
whistling weirdly and like listening to jazz and lying
because
in fields.
It's because Clark was a fan, and so was Cartmell and Courtney Pine, the acid jazz movement it was called. Mm. And he'd been in the charts for about 2 months. This was his new sound. That thing you're hearing, you think, oh yeah, I hear that in 100 soundtracks and they use it, a version of it as a sampling for tennis matches now. That was Courtney Pine's sound. Okay, it's Sonny Rollins and it's John Coltrane and every great sax player that ever lived. But it was Courtney Pine's take. And for a musician, this is a really exciting new thing, as much as all of this is an exciting new thing. I want the duck to stay in. Why didn't we get the duck?
Okay. Nathan, do you know about the duck? So Noel Edmonds' house party had this thing where he was going to, on his house party program, have a thing where, did you spot the duck in this week's drama? And then he would get BBC Dramas to film a special scene with a duck so he could show it on the show and say, no, really, that was in it. So they shot an alternative version of the first Ghetto Blaster scanner screen scene where Ace is calling out to the Doctor. He's in the TARDIS and he says duck, and because they've just been attacked, she just ducks.
I'm having a massive duck in here.
Oh, doesn't it make it to the, there's a special edition. Do you remember there was a VHS release that had extra footage, and I think the duck is in it.
Yeah.
And the Gainsborough portrait is in it.
Yeah, and Sylve actually wanted the duck scene to be in the Prince final program Edward's because he made friends
in a
with
duck
the
outfit.
Duck.
Yes. Yes, he did. The duck was following Sylve around all day and quacking after him like a, because he kept feeding it, so he thought it was his mother.
You know,
it's lovely. Dr. Seuss wrote all the dialogue for the duck for that particular moment.
When I was a teenager, my brother had a duck as a pet for a few years, and they are incredibly affectionate and lovely. Like, it was a really, really cute duck. I can't repeat its name.
They don't crap
because
on your Pertwees, do they?
we would need the explicit tag. So the Gainsborough portrait scene, on the VHS, there is the extended edition. For the DVD, they made it just deleted scenes, and there are actually some deleted scenes missing because it was a very quick package.
I wish they'd included them because they're gorgeous. It was a quick package, wasn't it, so to speak?
I gather there's some kind of rights issues tied up, which was also tied up in the American Making of special that was made for this as well, because that's only on the video.
The doco, and they kept following them around and annoying the buggery out of everyone. This was apparently, according to Sylve and Sophie, the hardest one to film of every single story they ever did.
Yeah,
well, they said this was so tough. Time was against them. It wasn't the story that bankrupted the Hooniverse, and, you know, one of the reasons they say it was axed was not actually Michael Grade's dissociation and indifference. It was because the Happiness Patrol, you wouldn't get it, we didn't mention it last story, but the Happiness Patrol bankrupted the Doctor Who production office.
What a good one to do it on, though. But yeah,
it also looks the cheapest, so I can't see how they did that.
Yeah, they lost a lot of time with filming, just with a lot of little accidents. Things like, so
it's all OB, so
yeah.
The Cybermen costumes were completely new, of course. It was a new kind of lighter suit, but was actually hotter for the actors
hotter,
to wear.
With a new jaw.
It split at the crotch. There were new
cricket gloves. They have cricket gloves.
They have cricket gloves. The helmets were redesigned
and
to be
cricket boxes. If only they'd had those, they would have done fine. The helmets were designed to shiny.
Well, the helmets were designed to be shiny, but also they were redesigned to be easily removable because during Attack of the Cybermen and during Earthshock as well,
several extras died of asphyxiation.
Well, they had attacks of claustrophobia, so it was designed to get them out easily. The problem was, however, because everything was so rushed, some of the helmets had jagged metal inside of them, which literally pierced an extra's ear.
Oh, God.
So
they also had a new coating, a chrome paint that was incredibly expensive, but it oxidized outside the studio. Gold.
So they had to come up with a different type.
It's a bit meta, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've got perfect casting for this story. Can I just throw it in?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It shouldn't have been Anton Differing. It should have been Kenneth Williams. He was still with us.
Oh, that would have been wonderful.
It should have been exactly Charles Hawtrey. could have been Richard.
Yes.
And I think we could have had Hattie Jakes as Lady Painfort and Barbara Windsor Castle as Arundel Castle. They'd all been romping around inside Barbara Windsor.
Yeah, so
that works.
So there were actually days where the documentary crew was meant to go out on the shoot, and J&T said, look, I'm really sorry, we just have so much to do that you cannot come out this
really
day.
You're really pissing me off.
And you're really annoying.
No, they really, really were.
Yeah.
And even Gary Downey, who had a reputation. Do you know that he and Sophie, at this point, we can throw it in now because it's convention circuit gossip, had a little bit of a discussion.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
I'm bogging off in my upper middle class manner. It's official. It's on the DVDs. I'm upper middle class, you bog. And I'm going to bog face. I'm going to toe rag. I'm going to off, and you can as well. She did. She did on set. She kind of had a reason to, because he was being just a little bit bossy.
Yeah.
But at the same time, being J&T's partner, I think he also understood. Oh, I don't know if they were partners at the time. Oh, they were.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, yeah.
Was the point that this thing has no money, you have to get this in the can.
Yeah, yeah, what it was she kept flubbing her lines on a certain scene.
It was also hard being outside. Yeah. That bloody duck just wouldn't let go, would it?
And also, for an event they went to for publicity, she had contracted food poisoning halfway through the shoot. So it was dealing with that.
It was all of that custard and tinned corn, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah, well, Greatest Show in the Galaxy, which had been shot before this, of course. Yes. Gary Downey also had disagreements on that with the set designer, which we'll discuss next week.
Yes, we will.
And not only that, but during Remembrance of the Daleks, Sophie and J&T had actually had a falling out, which by this point had been repaired.
Yeah, but Sophie's a good...
Yeah, I forgot to mention this at the time, but pretty much she had to stay late for recording, which was absolutely fine. But she just said to J&T, well, look, can I get a taxi home? Because it's going to be difficult for me to get
home.
I'm
still a little girl sometimes, yes.
And apparently J&T lost it, but they rebonded over Greatest Show. But, yeah, this was a very tense production, not helped by Doctor Who Bulletin. Do we know about this?
Yeah, Gary Levy and the photos they took on site are just exquisite. A blackboard or, a bit of wood, silver in the middle of a field looking cross. Anyway,
what were they doing?
They bombed the site, in other words.
Yeah,
photobombed themselves into the site and interrupted and actually did a little bit of mock terrorist fan action. Gary Levy's in a bit of a case, isn't he, in his day?
So the cameo artiste Dolores Gray, who plays Mrs. Remington.
So famous to everyone. She was in, was she in Follies as well? Yes, she was. She was in Follies.
She's wonderful. I really like her. It's complete padding. It's completely able to be excised from the story with no real effect.
I entirely refuse that that's ever done.
But it's
got some of the greatest lines.
So fun. Mm. Yeah, she's really wonderful. Mm. Yeah.
So what happened was Sheldon Collings and Gary Lee from Doctor Who Bulletin turned up to take photographs of Dolores. Now, John didn't have a great relationship with Doctor Who Bulletin, but, still gave them news and whatnot. But what the problem was here...
No, they'd been at war for several years.
Oh, yeah, but they still got information from the production office at times. Okay. But what had happened here was the Daily Mail had been given the exclusive on Dolores Gray being in the show. So John thought, hold on, if they take photographs, that's going to break our exclusivity, which, of course, didn't help the feud between them.
Yeah,
that's actually
Betty
gonna be,
and Joan.
That's actually going to be season three of Feud, J&T and DWB.
Yeah, I'd watch that. Gary Levy was a bit of a totty in his time. Yes.
Yeah, so, with all those problems, it's a wonder the episode got made at all. The stuff in the hangar at the end, a lot of it was, as the cast put it, semi-improvised. We had the script, but we didn't rehearse.
And a bit dangerous.
I'm astounded by how brave Sophie is going on that gantry with that massive drop below.
Which she was told was 20 feet.
It
wasn't.
The novelisation, I think the script originally sets all that stuff in a building site.
Yeah.
And because you've got this sort of huge, huge space, I think it looks terrific. It's a great
choice.
Yeah,
it's a Nissan hangar. Do you know what that site is now?
They knocked it down.
It's the Millennium Dome. But they've knocked that down too, haven't they? I'll have to go and have a look.
I mean, they literally...
Yeah, but it was the site of the Millennium Dome afterwards. Yeah.
They knocked that warehouse down within
a week. Because of this show.
Because of this show. But yeah, the building site is what it originally was in the script. They had a building site lined up, which withdrew permission about 2 weeks before the shoot, and Gary Downey actually contacted the gas board who recommended this place. So it's interesting.
He just happened to be ringing the gas ball because he liked to, make prank calls. Me pilot's gone out again, that kind of thing. You get the drift.
They did find a disused power station they could have used, but they would have had to pay £30,000 to have it decontaminated before going in. So they
normally they didn't care enough about the actors to bother doing that, I think.
Yeah, and well, God, this was the last story to shoot. Yeah, but despite all that, there is a lot in this story I love. And, a lot of it, I think, is down to Fiona Walker, who is just exquisite.
Yeah, fabulously crazy, isn't she? Like, really, really great.
I think she's absolutely dead right on tone for this. Yeah. She overplays it, sure, but she's doing Jacobean drama, not Shakespearean, the much darker Jamesian stuff. Jared Murphy was in the IRC at the time and Glow is beautifully.
And he's actually, if we want to rescue despots, dictators and murderers, I do like that he becomes all lovely and comely and squishy at the end, but he's a freaking killer for the beginning of it. Yeah, no, he's the dark bastard, but no, we all love him. And Sylv strokes his beard in the outtakes. We won't get to see that.
There's a lot of iambic pentameter actually in the dialogue.
Well, Clark wanted to write all of their lines and they said, no one actually talked like that.
No, but you want to make them sound like they're from 1638. I think
I'd like to believe that Fiona Walker, oh, they get the dates all horribly wrong and it's all so silly. And, you know, she's got roundheads in her backyard, hasn't she? But that didn't happen for another 10 years. The New Model Army wasn't even formed in 1638. So she gets it all horribly, horribly wrong. Can we talk about antecedents, where this show comes from?
Yes.
You know, it actually does come from somewhere.
And really?
It's proper
wacky
science.
Races?
A drug fever.
No, this, does everyone remember a lovely bloke who died in the 90s? I think he died early 90s, actually. Gene Shoemaker. Not the movie critic on the NBC late night show with Jane Pauley. Not that one. Gene Shoemaker, as in the Shoemaker-Levy comet.
Oh, yes.
That was in 92, so after this show. Interestingly, that they were picking up on Shoemaker stuff because that's the first time that we saw a comet head into Jupiter's influence and burn up, and so we got to learn lots of new things. Shoemaker had a bit of a theory that was a bit of a wild one at the time, and he was on TV talking about it, and he wrote about it. It's a really interesting and lovely and gentle man, and he was a humanist and a humanitarian, so he's kind of crops up in other things as well. He talked about, because, hey, it's the late 80s and we were all having acid flashbacks, that perhaps Sol in Mutter's spiral, it actually has a twin. And he was using this to explain things like our odd, that there are odd orbits of our planets, and we have certainly odd things that going on. Mercury one, the inclusion of Pluto. I'm not an astronomer, so please correct me, dear listener. But one of his suppositions, he wasn't the only one that was saying it, was that our sun is in a 26 million year cycle with its binary star, which we can't see because it's a neutron star long dead. Do you know the name he gave that neutron star?
Nemesis.
It was called Nemesis. Yes.
Ah.
And it's a little theory. You can look it up, a little theory at the time. And he was using it to explain. And, of course, the Kabbalists and the neo-black Aquarians that we've talked about, you know, occult stuff has always come up. But he also hypothesized that every 26 million years, awful things like, oh, those dinosaurs were going to go anyway. So, yes, again, Matthew's entire career was completely wasted, killing himself for no good reason. But, yeah, every 26 million years. And he does posit that when this came about, that's why the dinosaurs wiped out. And actually, we're due for it at the beginning of the 21st century.
Right, so the idea all that around, the Nemesis sort of is managed. Coming back every 25 years.
Every 26 years.
Andromeda is going to swallow the moon. And it's just going to be a very bad time.
Your cock is going to crow thrice and lay addled eggs.
Yeah, that's right.
Nathan. It's not a duck at all.
Lady Painfort's horses did turn and eat each other.
Yeah.
Do you know why she's called Painfort? Because that's what they did to witches. It was pressing heavy things upon them.
Yeah.
Brian Blessed upon them. Yeah. She throws herself into her own statue. I think it's a bit gorgeous. We've all had moments like that, haven't we?
Yeah, I'm having one now.
Yeah, I was going to say during the podcast. But isn't that beautiful that the actual, one of the antecedents of this, which is what I do on this podcast, is proper wibbly wobbly non-science science. This is a really good story.
I think that's why I really wish the Nazis weren't in there, so we had more time.
Yeah, it should have been Kenneth Williams and Charles Horchard.
That being said, just looking over my notes, I have realized that Kevin Clark's thought with the Nazis, of course, was their obsession with the occult and the quest for the Spear of Destiny, for which he substitutes the bow and the arrow this.
It was much less silly in the original draft.
I think, you know what, I think the big problem is, as we'll discover next year with one of the three-parters as well, that he possibly wrote enough for a four-part story for a three-part slot.
It's actually a problem in the Cartmell era, which is that the scripts come in too long think about Curse of Fenric had a special edition. Yep. We had a special edition of this. There are some really, really horrific edits, I think, in Happiness Patrol where you can see we come into scenes much later than we should be. And so that does tend to be a problem, and it does affect what's going on here. But it does mean it's sort of, it's, you know.
It does feel quite contemporary, it feels, doesn't it?
Pacey.
It jumps.
Yeah.
You know what? If this had been the studio bound story, this would have been much worse. Being on location helps it because there is a sense of movement.
It's fun.
And, you know, the weird thing is, though,
it's
even
got llamas.
It has llamas. Even it's the 25th time, according to Doctor Who facts, that llamas have appeared on screen.
Paul McGann's wig is actually made out of fur from wool from those llamas. But even with these pacing issues, we still have the scene with Dolores Gray, which is wonderful. But, you know,
it is.
Who is she? There's
why is she here?
It's one of two vignettes to kind of show Lady Painfall interacting with the modern day, but using Lady Remington and the skinheads as two sort of hyper real examples of the modern day.
Many found it so.
Well, I mean, the interaction with Lady Painfall Mrs. Remington is so great just because Lady Painfort has poisoned one of Mrs. Remington's ancestors.
You know, I think that scene is slightly more worthy because it's the explanation of how they get back to the hangar.
Yeah.
You know, but the two scenes with the skinheads are complete comic relief, but they really work because of the punchline, like, who did this to you? Social workers! But
I don't understand that. Do their social workers normally strip them to their underwear and tie them up and hang them from a tree?
Because Lady Painfort and Richard are speaking all plummy and what have you, they must be social workers. So they think they're social workers in the first scene and try to mug them, at which point they string them up in a tree and burn their clothes. And it's just the doctor's reaction of just, Ace, come and help me get these people down. And, you know, then we never see them again. We have no idea if they have to go back to town in their boxes. And yet, one of them's wearing, like, cartoon boxes covered in kisses. It's a wonderful, absurd thing that you'd never get in Star Trek, God's sake.
Well, fun. Yes.
But, you know, unlike the Lady Remington scene, it just has no plot impact whatsoever, and the Mrs. Remington scene has very little plot impact.
I really love that Dolores Gray is named after an intimate shaving device for lady people.
In the first draft, when the American tourist was referred to as Mr. Remington, they were trying to get Larry Hagman.
Oh, my God.
And they couldn't. And so,
but they almost did, because one of the cast members had just worked with him and were mates.
Yeah, I guess.
Was he
going
to wear that outfit, like the pearls and
the hat? He's actually up for that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
He's really saucy and naughty. Apparently he was the scallywag on the set of I Dream of Jeannie, and the reason the show went so long and the cast all stayed together, and you didn't get cast changes like you did in a lot of other 60s shows, it's because Hagman But Hagman was a real piss taker on set. Super clever, almost bipolar is in his book, if you ever used to sit and read that in the school library. I wonder what my librarian was like in school. She used to buy a lot of these things. But yeah, he had that very Peter Sellers manic depressive thing. But when he was up, he was really naughty. Much like this podcast.
Well, I gather he was up for it, but it was kind of a scheduling thing. Whereas Dolores Gray was performing in the UK at the time. She was performing in Follies at the time. Famously, and probably everyone's heard the story, but when her chauffeur came to drive her to set, she got to set and said, "Where are my jewels?" And she just left this suitcase full of jewels on the pavement, because people just pack her luggage. That's what they do. And thankfully, the caretaker of the building had come out and spotted it and brought it in.
Peter Capaldi.
And sent it on. It was £25,000 worth of uninsured jewels.
Yeah.
The production didn't know she was bringing them, but she just went, "Oh, darling, these will go lovely with my dress. Where are my jewels?" Yeah, and
she shit herself something horrible in the back of that car. It was rancid. You know that look when you've got Richard leaning in and she's sitting there and she says, "No, you're coming." And the reason they look like, it's not because he doesn't know how to open door handles, it's because it stinks like a zoo.
It stinks like a Pertwee figure.
It does. Dirty bit.
Now, of course, Kevin Clark, it's kind of weird, you know. All the writer's brief was, we want to bring back mystery to the character of the Doctor. So Kevin Clark and Andrew Cartmell interpreted this as, so in Kevin Clark's script, we'll reveal something huge about him. So, behave. So Kevin Clark's concept was, let's reveal that the Doctor is God.
I love that.
Well,
Cartmell claims it as his own.
Oh, okay. Well, JNT hated it and vetoed it.
Yeah, of course he did.
But yeah, because they kind of saw it as, if he's got godlike powers, why doesn't he do this? Why doesn't he do that?
Mm. Why does he spend episode 3 locked up?
Yeah. But Cartmell's point was that his manipulation all through human history is that in our world, he is actually our God across all religions.
Yeah.
Because Pertwee was almost Buddha for a little while.
That's true.
He does introduce us to fire.
That's true.
He does. Mm-hmm. Isn't that Saint Eileen Way, though? Mm. But no. She was the Loki all the time, wasn't she? She wouldn't let us have the fire. No.
But the problem, I think, with that is if you do that and you follow it to its natural conclusion, what do you get? You get Death Comes to Time.
Ouch.
No one wants that.
And you know what? Death Comes to Time is a very interesting concept, but you think about the fact that the Doctor's a god and has these godlike powers. He uses them. Spoiler alert, no one wants to listen to Death Comes to Time.
I've listened to it once.
I do apologise because I believe the writer being Colin Meek was actually Nev Fountain.
I thought it was Dan.
Dan, the director. I'm not sure
who. Is it Nev who wrote it?
I could be wrong.
The point is, we all thought this is completely naff and silly, and we need to also mention, as Ace does, you know how she mentions naff in this show? It's naff. Naff is Pilare for heterosexual.
Ah. It was naff and it was boring. Yeah.
But a lot of these ideas were actually Cartmell's, like sending Ace to TimeLordUniversitySchool.com.
Yeah.
I thought, that's stupid.
But well, yeah, that was the original plan.
That's what they were going to do, as we'll find out for season 27, perhaps. Yeah.
The thing is, when Death Comes to Time came out, I loved it, and I still
Fry is the Minister of Chance.
Yeah. Jacqueline Pierce is in it.
I still kind of love the ideas. But how is making the Doctor giving him godlike powers any different to having the screwdriver unlock everything and can hack into everything?
And in fact, if we hadn't had Death Comes to Time, we wouldn't have had you in your lovely cosplay, would we?
I have got that on the Flight Through Entirety Facebook page.
It is a bit lovely.
Me cosplaying as Sylvester in Death Comes to Time.
In a frock coat.
Along with a friend of the podcast, Aaron Klimas, cosplaying as the New Adventures Seventh Doctor.
Yes.
Aaron J. Klimas, when I don't think he was even allowed to drink then. That's how young he was.
About that, aren't we?
So instead, I think what we get instead
is... Tick go.
I think what we get instead is better because it's Painfort alluding that she knows secrets and
it
creates...
It's fun!
It's fun, it's exactly. Good. It's not...
Wasn't bored.
It's not the Doctor's name is Cecil, you know.
Yes!
It's Gordon, anyway.
It's Gordon, we all know it's Gordon.
But
I shall tell them. And it's the beautiful comeback. I shall tell them. No one cares.
Yeah, and
I think... his response. Well, know what? The casual viewer couldn't give us stuff. Who is watching this who isn't, who of the not we is watching this? And 23rd of November means what? And if you weren't there in 63, you wouldn't have even known.
No.
And it's the 22nd anyway that's the Kennedy assassination. You wouldn't have even known that happened.
Well... I think it does tell us something because those mysteries can't be solved, can't be answered because the answer has to be uninteresting.
Exactly.
And it's a good idea, like Cartmell's instinct to kind of reintroduce some kind of ambiguity about the Doctor's origin. That's a great idea. But he can't ever reveal it without wrecking it, I think, because then it's just another tedious origin story.
Well, yeah, and we're all in accord on that, and Todd and James are in accord on that as well. That was in our Stones of Blood commentary a couple of weeks ago. We discussed that, and Todd just said, I don't ever want to find out. What is the point of finding out?
Yeah, why does the Doctor leave Gallifrey? It
tells us nothing.
Yeah.
You know, whereas he...
That bloody Clara.
I'm thinking it was like he had like massive, massive overdue fees at Civic Video.
I think he was trying to get away from his granddaughter.
Oh, damn.
Why are you in here?
Well, anyway, they're loomed. How can you have a loomed granddaughter? It's like a hand-knitted granddaughter.
In Kevin Clark's original script, because he went back and looked it up in the Doctor Who Monster book, because Carol Ann's in there, he did have references to...
She is in the Monster book. There's a reason for that.
When Richard and Lady Painfort are discussing the Doctor, it is he, etc., etc., there was going to be more saying, his face has changed and so has that of the wench. And she was going to go on and describe Billy and Susan. And the idea was much like Remembrance of the Daleks, where it's Billy dropping off the Hand of Omega. It's also when he left Gallifrey, that's when he took the Validium statue with him as well.
As well as the hand, as well as the
worshipful and ancient lore of Gallifrey.
And
TARDIS was really full of
Timothy Dalton's pajamas.
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, this
posing pouch of Rassilon.
This brings us to
the cricket box of Omega.
This brings us to what Ace points out in the final scene, whereas this is exactly what you did to the bloody Daleks. And I think if
the
this
commode of the other.
Do you actually think that there was some intention of actually wiping out the Cybermen completely?
You know, I think it may be that they're trying to restate the mystery of the show. So let's kiss goodbye to all the old stuff. So we get rid of the Daleks, we get rid of the Cybermen in such a way we can always bring them back if we want
to. The system of Christopher Robin. Had a lot of that in there, didn't he?
But that's the thing. I think this works so well as the season finale because instead of just being the same plot as Remembrance of the Daleks, it's a bookend.
Yeah.
The Doctor starts the season by getting rid of the Daleks. He ends the season by getting rid of the Cybermen. And in the middle, we have two strange stories about overthrowing an evil government and destroying ancient gods.
And hippies.
You know. Mm. So Ace
get to that.
Ace pointing out, oh, you know, that's how you nobbled the Daleks. It's a callback rather than a lampshade.
And it also is giving him some kind of purpose. Remember, he says to the statue that he still needs her because things are still imperfect.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So I kind of think that giving him a mission is kind of what they sort of need to do.
Is it a bit Bionic Woman, 6 million person?
Well, I mean, I like the idea that the Doctor just travels because he wants to see the universe.
Well, that's what we do because we're lazy.
Yeah. Yes. Right. I don't have to do anything. You know? Like because Peter Davison's mission, Doctor.
And every other episode of this season, every other story of this season is a mission.
Yeah.
And it turns out so was Dragonfire.
Yes.
Yep.
But
it turns out maybe even Delta was because he was looking for a warrior companion because he'd realised that Mel could not be what he needed to achieve in this life. And he was looking for his Valkyrie, his Brunhilde.
Right.
I should have just cast Joan Sims. It should have been terrific.
I mean, what do we think about...
Please vote for Mysterious Planet, do listen. For the next.
So are we okay with the sort of rip-off factor then?
What, Mysterious Planet? I've never watched it, but it's got Joan Sims. I think we need to see it. Rip-off factor? Well, I mean, what has Doctor Who ever done but rip-off and do it really nicely by repositing? It was the first postmodern production on television. It's about what Nathan said in the very first story. It's about TV itself. Remember when he said that? I quite liked that. That was Nathan. It's the Nathan show.
So we're going to try our talents in the audition for the Psychic Circus. Do come back for the greatest show in the galaxy next week. Don't forget, in our show notes, you can vote for the Colin Baker story you'd like us to do a commentary on. The nominations are Mark of the Rani, Revelation of the Daleks, The Mysterious Planet, and Terror of the Vervoids. You can find that at flightthroughentirety.sexy, Flight Through Entirety on Facebook and Apple Podcasts, and at FTE Podcast on Twitter. Over on Bondfinger, we have the first three Pierce Brosnan Bond films and all preceding ones on bondfinger.com, Bondfinger on Facebook and Apple Podcasts, and at Bondfingercast on Twitter.
Bondfinger of Omega.
Until next time, may none of your vile neighbours steal your cook. Thank you very much for listening and good night.
Good night.
Infamy, infamy.
Flight to Entirety, starring Nathan Bottomley, Brendan Jones and Richard Stone. Theme arrangement by Cameron Lamb. Logo designed by Anthony Wells. This episode, Exit Pursued by a Bear, was recorded on the 22nd of July 2017. The next episode will be released on the 20th of August. When the Doctor relaunched the Nemesis statue in 1988, it was sent into a slightly more distant orbit with a period of 28 to 29 Earth years, which explains a lot when you come to think about it.
But, I mean, that's not the initial conception, is it? He travels because he can't control the TARDIS.
Well, no, we think he's escaping, yeah, but as Newman said, Newman was boggly awful when you look at his concepts and his 86 concept, which have we talked about
that
yet?
Yeah, we have.
That's great. Turn it into a woman!
After turning it back into Patrick Trout, that was the plan.
That's what Pat would have wanted.
Turn it into a Joan woman. Sims.
There's not enough mind lesson in this.
I thought you were being Matt Berry.
Same difference, actually. He's my man crush. I'll just hold him up for the listener. There you are. Delicious. Okay. He's canon now because Peter Davison's his flatmate in Toast of London.
Anything anyone else wants to say?
There's not enough nudity in this story. It's a little bit.
As Sylvester would put it, look, there were some very good-looking firefighter-type chaps in those Cyberman costumes, as Sophie discovered to her delight as we were entirely on location.
He was so naughty to out her as being a little bit frisky, and that's right. And I've got to say for Soph's, you know, or for Soph's benefit and Arja in her role. She's never denied it. She said, yeah, I had a good time.
Yeah.
Then I had an upper middle class good time. Right upper.
Okay.
Maybe.
Right.
Right upper. I imagine.
See, I can't look at you when I do this because I'll just completely break up.
Like a comet.
Well, dear listener, we've had enough of running about and...